Vida Serrano, in uniform, behind her own desk, was back to being the admiral, full of advice for younger officers.
If you get your mind straightened out, if you learn to ask the right questions, you'll be an admiral yourself in a few years. As for now, you did well enough with Vigilance and Paradox. We'll see what you can do with a real battle group. I'll expect you to be ready to ship out as soon as you get Vigilance back out of the yards.
A battle group? Vigilance? A real?
Harris looked at her aunt and Vida grinned, a wicked grin of delight at her niece's surprise.
You've earned that much. I can't get you a star yet, but if you handle the group the way I expect, it'll come. You'll be going straight into trouble, of course.
What about personnel?
Your lover?
All of them.
I thought I'd give you Arash Lavati as second in command. That should make an interesting combination, you and Arash.
Harris had her doubts about Arash even now.
He's senior.
He was. You're getting a promotion, remember?
Harris fumbled around in her memories of the past few years, trying to untangle what she burned to know from what her aunt would consider strategic thinking.
How did I get that first job with Lady Cecilia?
Good girl. That took a bit of pressure on the employment agency. I wanted you to have flexibility, a ship with decent legs, a wealthy employer with an irregular schedule. Lady Cecilia was the first one to meet those qualifications.
Did you know her?
Not really. We'd met years back at a function she probably doesn't remember. That didn't matter. The other things did. And since you're now on the right track, I won't make you drag the rest out piecemeal. Yes, it was more than blind good luck or your talented scavenger's native ability that put certain items in his way when you needed them. Those military-grade scans, that weapons control upgrade. You'd earned that when you got Lepescu. I made sure Lavati got the assignment to carry the prince rather than Sorkong's grandson. And yes, Kutsudas was planted on you, and a good thing too. Not that we didn't need to get him away from the trouble he'd brewed before it cost us his life and Lavati's ship. You don't know yet how ticklish things were in Fleet after the abdication, or how many holes I had to try to plug with too few resources.
You're going to explain?
As for the yacht, you can tell Lady Cecilia that the Fleet would be delighted to purchase it from her at a good price. We can always use ships like that on covert ops. And I really admire the beacon switch your technicians put in her.
Yes, sir.
Welcome home. Welcome home and good hunting.
Rafa stared her mother down.
No, I'm not trying to copy that thornbuckle girl, as you put it. I don't have her flair. I don't even want her flair. But I do want my own life, and that life is with Ronnie Carruthers.
I suppose you'll do it, whatever I say.
Rafa waited while her mother worked it all out.
Where are you going?
We're going to migrate over to the Palandra Group and take up an investor's claim.
But Rafa, dear, you don't have to do that. It's all right about Ronnie, now that his parents and his aunt aren't feuding.
We want to do that. It's nothing to do with his parents or his aunt. We want our own lives, and we can have it out on the new lands.
Rafa hoped she didn't sound bitter. She wasn't bitter, not really. But she wanted her children to have a chance to advance, without a layer of rejuvenance over their heads smothering them. She thought of the specks she'd seen, and found herself grinning.
It's not like it used to be. Pioneers these days have it much easier.
Never mind that she and Ronnie had already decided to spend most of their money on a bigger grant and fewer amenities. By the time her parents found out, if they ever did, she and Ronnie would have it all straightened out. Her mother gave her a long, straight look.
You must have more of your Aunt Marta in you than I thought. Well, just be sure to keep a little back for escape if things go haywire. Your father and I didn't stay on Buriel.
You pioneered?
Not exactly. We tried to go out and run a subsidiary by ourselves.
And you think I take after Aunt Marta? Mother, you're a fraud.
I don't want you to make our mistakes.
We'll make our own.
Keep a little back. But I hope you never need it. You will let us give you a good wedding, won't you?
As long as it's in the sculpture garden, and I get to choose my own dress.
George stared moodily at the ceiling. It wasn't fair. Ronnie and Rafa running off to play pioneer over in the Palandras. Brunn being mysterious and busy and having no time for old friends. Captain Serrano suddenly restored to her former rank and commanding a battle group, with no interest in helping a former Royal Aerospace Service officer transfer his commission to the regs. The clones were off wherever they were.
Moping?
George jumped. He hadn't heard his father come in.
I feel left out.
His father had that knack of extracting what you least wanted to say, fatal for many a witness. His father came around and looked at him. He realized that his father looked older and more worn than he had seen him before.
Time to grow up, George. They have.
It was fun.
Yes, but it's over. If you want to enjoy the rest of your life, you'll have to find another way.
I don't know what to do. I'm not like Ronnie. I don't have Rafa. Brun isn't the girl I grew up with anymore.
You're not that boy either, though you don't seem to know it yet. George, tell me, why didn't the clones kill you?
I think I talked them to death nearly, and it confused their circuits.
And back on Cerealis, you influenced the men who captured you.
Well, not well enough. I got shot in the gut anyway.
Well then, what do you really like to do?
Talk. Talk and make people do things, just by talking at them. Sometimes it backfires.
Yeah, sometimes it does. But when it works... You know, you've just described my career.
Law? I wouldn't be any good at that.
Because you're lazy, self-indulgent, and sometimes drive people crazy?
That's not how I'd have put it, but yes.
George, you've defined yourself in relation to Ronnie and Buttons and their friends for years. Rich, idle, spoiled, all that. But you're not, really. That's why they find you odious. Not because you're idle and spoiled, but because you pretend to be. And they scent it like hounds scent blood. For instance, suppose you tell me about Variaster Limited versus Transgene.
George scowled and hesitated. It had popped into his head, but he didn't like where his father was headed. He gave a précis of the case.
The only reason I know about it is that you left the brief out one time when I was trying to find your signature pad so I could get a signed excuse for class.
George, most kids who want to forge a signature simply use a copy algorithm in their notepads. They don't wade through 1,000-page briefs and remember them well enough to give a cogent précis 12 years later.
Was it that far back? I thought it was only 7 or 8.
Not quite. So, you remember that as well, do you? You might not find it as boring as you think, George. After all, you've been sneaking looks at my work for years. Has it been that bad?
Well, no.
But law school would be. He could just imagine day after day with a cube reader.
The thing is, when you're in law, everyone assumes the odiousness comes from that. And you can save most of it for the courtroom.
Law school.
Law school is where I met your mother. It's not all cube readers.
The ginger-haired girl he vaguely remembered from that hunt ball grinned at him from across the room when he went in to take the placement exam. She had certainly grown up, he thought. He had enjoyed that evening, but he hadn't seen her since he'd left Cerealis. Now, she winked at him and he winked back. She'd never called him odious. He looked at the exam and realized it was full of things he actually knew something about. Brigdis Serkin reported to the crew lounge of the Great Liner, hoping her luck had changed. Lady Cecilia had found her this berth. She had said goodbye to Brun and Mahari and the rest the day before, over in the regular space service section of Rockhouse Major. Now she was committed to a civilian life. She had few regrets. The third mate was checking crew aboard.
Brigdis Serkin, welcome aboard. Wow, we've heard about you. We're all glad to have you on our ship.
Here, they found her exotic. Her adventures convinced them she was extraordinary, someone of exceptional courage and wit. As the weeks passed, Serkin relaxed, finding new friends and a lot less tension. She found it hard to define the difference. The crew were all highly competent, and the standard of courtesy was as high. But the great ship had polish without an edge, like a ceremonial sword, a work of art and not a weapon. She liked that. She was glad to have known Meharry and Brunn and the others, glad to know what protected her and her crewmates, but even more glad that she was no longer trying to live up to that standard. The curtained alcove gave them privacy. The cooks gave them the best food for light years around. They ate slowly, taking the time to savor every nuance of flavor. Their table conversation lingered on the antics of favorite relatives, nieces and nephews for the most part. The waiter, carrying away the remains of the fish course, stopped to talk to the kitchen worker who received the tray.
It's so nice to see real quality. Ladies who appreciate good food, who take the time to be courteous to the staff. Just sitting there talking about their families without a care in the world reminds me of my own auntie.
Later, when they were giggling over something he didn't understand, he stopped by again.
Perhaps a bit tipsy, all that champagne, you know. But they're rather sweet, if you know what I mean. Perfectly harmless.
The Serrano Legacy, Winning Colors, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2002, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Lily Beacon, Michael Glenn, Corey James, Terrence Aselford, Andy Clements, Sonny Lasky, David Coyne, Tess Rowan, Stephen Carpenter, Richard Rowan, Elliot Dash, Eric Messner, Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Elizabeth Demery, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Michael John Casey, Faith Potts, Thomas Penny, Johan Detweiler, M.B. Van Dorn, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Johan Detweiler. Graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. If you enjoyed Serrano Legacy, be sure to look for the Deathstalker series, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras and podcasts.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Concentrate, concentrate, and visualize a storm.
Graphic Audio presents.
What? What is this storm?
DC Comics.
This is a code A emergency. Do you copy?
Justice League of America. Superman. The never-ending battle.
There is power that not even they can overcome.
Where is he?
I have my own reserves, fool!
Hello, Superman. If you can still hear this, you are in the final moments of your life.
Copyright 2008, DC Comics. Justice League of America, Superman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics 2008. All rights reserved.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.